Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 1, The Genealogical Table of the Daughters of Manu. Text number 21. Tapyamananam tribhuvanam pranayamaita saugnina yigitinam nemutna samiksha prabhavastraya tapyamanam. While practicing austerities, tribhuvanam, the three worlds, pranayam, practice by breathing exercise, edisa, fuel, agnina, by the fire, nigatinha, issuing out, mune, of the great sage, mudna, the top of the head, samiksha, looking over, prabhava, traya, the three great gods, Brahma, Vishnu and Maheshvara. Translation: while Atri Muni was engaged in these severe austerities, a blazing fire came out of his head by virtue of his breathing exercise. And that fire was seen by the three principal deities of the three worlds. Purport by His Divine Grace, Aishi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the fire of pranayam is mental satisfaction. That fire was perceived by the supersoul, Vishnu, and thereby Lord Brahma and Shiva also perceived it. Atri Muni, by his Hare Krishna, young lady. You sit nice and quiet, don't you? That's a good girl. That fire was perceived by the supersoul Vishnu, and thereby Lord Brahma and Shiva also perceived it. Atri Muni, by his breathing exercise, concentrated on the supersoul, or the Lord of the universe. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord of the universe is Vasudev Savamiti, and by the direction of Vasudev, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva work. Therefore, on the direction of Vasudev, both Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva perceive the severe penance adopted by Atri Muni, and thus they were pleased to come down, as stated in the next verse. So, this is a very important principle within the existence anywhere within material or spiritual worlds, is that the principle that we are all following a leader. It's like yesterday, of course, was Radhastami, who is the supreme leader. Even Krishna follows Radharani because it is described that Radharani's love is so pure and unlimited that Krishna found himself unable to repay that sort of love, to reciprocate with it, except to give himself and to be always in her debt. Therefore, Krishna has given himself to Radharani, and of course those who represent Radharani, the pure devotees, Krishna has given himself to them. So, Krishna, he does not give his blessings unless he has the permission of Radharani and the pure devotees in the line of Radharani. So even Krishna follows Radharani. That principle, But because it's absolute, Radharani is also following Krishna because it's his happiness that guides her every action, and that is her pure love. So this principle is found everywhere, right to the very top of the spiritual world, and is also, because this material world is a reflection of the spiritual world, it is also here. That the natural principle of is to follow those who are leading us. So then, you know, when Srila Prabhupada was in Russia, he was speaking with Professor Katovsky, and they were having a discussion, and you know, Professor Katovsky, who was the head of you know, Indology, I think that's the word, you know, Indian studies, who had no idea that, you know, we're a spirit soul. He thought really everything is just matter. But, you know, Srila Prabhupada was saying there's really no difference in what we're doing than what you're doing. So he says, you're following a leader, you follow Marx and Lenin, and we're following a leader, we follow Krishna. So there's no difference in what we're doing, actually. But it depends on why we should just follow one particular leader over another. So, but actually they can't, no one can say that we're doing anything different. No one can say, oh, you know, we have this system and you're doing something completely strange. No, we're doing exactly what you're doing. Everyone is following the leader. So the question is, then, which leader shall we follow? So when it comes to following a leader, generally what happens is that according to circumstances, we may only know one leader. So for instance, in North Korea, there's one leader in this world and no others. And the whole population tends to have that mood because they're very insulated. Actually, I saw a documentary where what the North Koreans do to get money to get their nuclear missiles, which they like to fire over the top of other countries, is that they you know, sell, they allow countries like Russia to purchase their members of their population for labour, slave labour. So, you know, thousands and thousands of them. So if you go into the, which the industries, say for instance the timber industry, the timber industry, we get timber, England gets timber. A lot of that timber that we're getting from overseas is coming from slave labour, and those slaves are the North Koreans who have been, you know, the Russians pay the North Koreans a little bit of money, and basically those people, they have to work for something like minimum 3 years, up to 10, maybe more, in Siberia, cutting down the logs, and they basically, they don't really get paid. They get fed, they get somewhere to sleep, like in the back of a truck or something, and they do that for about, you know, 3 to 10 years, there's no payment. If they don't do it, their families will suffer back in North Korea. So there's so if they run, their families, you know, are finished. So, but they had this documentary where people, you know, they wanted to see what the North Koreans people think if they're out of North Korea. Would they think any different of their country? You know, like what's going on there? And even in the middle of Siberia, when they set up these, logging camps with the slave labourers, it's all set up in a North Korean style. So even in that camp, there is only the influence of that leader as well. And no foreigners are allowed in there at all to influence them in any other way, that there may be something else going on in the world apart from the fact. So therefore, they are just fixed in that one opinion according to the one leader, no matter where they go in the world, that is fixed. There is no other leader to follow. And their perception of everything else that's going into the world comes from that one leader. So, you know, some people, they follow a leader because of that. Some people follow a leader because they're born in a particular place and they get a particular demigod, a particular personality. You know, if you're born in, you know, a particular part of the world, you know, it's popular, certain leaders, and then people will just follow that leader like that. Some people don't have a... You know, some people follow leaders because they have a particular interest. Right? So... you know, if someone is full of hate, you know, and they have racial hate and so many things, then because of that particular interest, they want to vent that particular, you know, that's their enjoyment, then they will find a leader who, you know, teaches them how to, you know, get the satisfaction of their envy and their hatred. So people follow leaders for different reasons. But actually, the proper way to follow a leader is that what you do is leadership starts from the top. And then from the big picture, everything comes down. That's right. So like children. So for instance, you know, we had a couple of little girls in there, one sitting quietly, the other one having a little play. So basically, they're following the leadership of mum. The bigger picture is I'm also one of the leaders. So they also have to follow my influence that I'm giving class. And I'm giving class because I'm following the influence of the, you know, the temple system that Srila Prabhupada has set up all over the world. The temples are following the influence of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada is following the influence, just like the demigods here, they're following the influence. Even great personalities like Brahma and Shiva, they're also following Vishnu. Ultimately, everyone, all the demigods, everyone within creation is under the leadership, like it or not, you know, voluntarily or by force, of Lord Vishnu, who is non-different from Krishna. So we have the smaller picture, of course, as to, you know, so we take birth in this particular time, we're thinking, what shall I do with my life? So our parents give us some information, and, you know, society gives us some information. But the bigger picture within the universe is that apart from, you know, how we may plan, how we maintain ourselves in midlife, there's a big event going on that those in the leadership of the universe, they understand that once in the day of Brahma, Krishna will appear. So that is a really bigger picture. And then just after the appearance of Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears and he gives everyone the opportunity that you can actually understand the topmost pure spiritual loving transactions in the spiritual world. You can enter into that in this lifetime and go back to the spiritual world even if there's no qualification. So that opportunity is also being, you know, spread all throughout the universe. So that is the big picture of, so the government has their, you know, 5-year economic plan, and, you know, the local councils have their plan, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has his 10,000 year plan as well. That's the bigger picture. So if we want to do anything in our life, when we take advice from those superior to us, we should always be very mindful to try and get the big picture. Not just that we take advice according to our own little picture. That's the danger. Okay. So Maharaj, I hear, has been, unfortunately I've been a bit busy, but I haven't been able to attend, but I heard he's been giving some nice seminars on Shravana. Strange enough, on Saturday we were also doing Bhaktivedanta, and we were doing the prayer Shravanam Kirtanam, so we were talking about Shravanam as well. And everywhere I go, it seems to be a bit of a topic. Now, in addressing that, what I noticed, what I was speaking about in Bhaktivedanta, is that Shravanam doesn't really go on properly. Because sometimes what I see, perhaps too often, is that Shravanam means that we hear from certain people who fit our particular agenda. That's not actually shravanam. Shravanam, you know, there are recommendations for how it is done properly, and shravanam means that you actually purposely seek out the best advice you can get, and you know, you also need to get all-rounded advice. So just like that is the nature of our sampradaya. When personalities like Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivasacharya, Shyamananda Prabhu, when they're initiated by their spiritual master, their spiritual master gave them instructions. But following the system that for some other instructions, to get a more broader view of other instructions, he sent them, you also take instructions from here, and here, and here, and here. So for, specifically studying the scriptures, go to the best, go to Jiva Goswami. If you want to hear about the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, go and associate with the associates. Go and see Janava Mata. Go and see, you know, these personalities that are still here on the planet, even after, you know, before or after the, you know. So to get that, shravanam means hearing. Shravanam is not, I will hear from one person and I will go through the temple and through my devotional life and I will select that I will not hear any other person. That's not shravanam. That means, someone who hears what they want to hear and nothing else, that's not actually hearing. It's a very limited form. It really remains literally on the material platform. Shravana means, as we used to do in the beginning of the movement, you would listen to every devotee. You know, if a devotee stopped to talk to you, you took it, Krishna is working through this devotee, there's something, I might need to, it may be helpful for my service. That's shravana. You're receptive to hearing from devotees. Wherever Krishna, just like Srila Prabhupada. We were reading previously that, one person in the army, the military, he said to Srila Prabhupada, and a librarian, you're doing so much work for these pamphlets and magazines. People read them and throw them away. If you want them to value it, if you want to, make a more permanent impact, you should write books. So Srila Prabhupada, he noted, that is the same big picture my Guru Maharaj gave. So therefore, he took it that through this person, my Guru Maharaj is speaking. And actually, that is the proper attitude towards the Guru. The proper attitude towards the Guru is one sees the Guru everywhere at all times. When Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, when he used to speak, there was one man who used to haggle and, harass him from the peanut stalls. But he used to criticize him and, say condescending things. His disciples were really angry, This is a Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta never really, got angry or disturbed. One day what happened was that he was chanting. I think he used to walk on the veranda there. And he noticed that his disciples, the sannyasis, they were celebrating. Jai, Hari Bol. He was thinking, I'm not aware of... he asked them, I'm not aware of any festival today. What is the big celebration? And they said, Guru Maharaj, that man who always criticized you and caused so much trouble, he died today. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, his tears streaming. He said, he was my guru. He was teaching me humility. Like that. So, no, that is. So, you know, that's hearing. That is hearing. You know, that is proper hearing. Not selective. Like that. So, by, and, you know, this is why they implemented, of course, the founder Acharya program to educate, you know, the whole society, who seems to have forgotten the principles that, one, the big picture comes from Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada. That's the big picture. Everyone should understand that. Everyone is working fully under his big plan. And he is working under the big plan of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. Print books. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, at one stage, he said, you know, sell the marble in the temples if we're going to fight, and better print books. You know, not that we should sell the temple, but, you know, how important. Books. So we're following that principle of Srila Prabhupada that, you know, this hearing and chanting of the descriptions in the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is the essence of our life. Chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and hearing and chanting related to Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the very heart of the existence of the devotee, more so than anything, and then distributing that knowledge to others. That is the basis. Books are the basis, Prabhupada said. So we follow that principle of Srila Prabhupada. But we also, Prabhupada also, when he initiated someone, he would say, you work under such and such. The person may never, they may have only seen Prabhupada once. Prabhupada's instructions were coming through, but they were coming through, you know, over the course of that whole devotee's life. So many devotees that Prabhupada wanted. You take instruction from him. That person will guide you. This one. And then when you want to do book distribution, you know, go see Tamal Krishna Maharaj. You want to do deity worship, you go, you know, see such like this. And also cooperate amongst the disciples in general. Get a, you know, a rounded picture of how, you know, if you're if one is situated in a community, you really have to get a little feedback as to whether you're situated nicely or whether you're ruffling feathers. So you have to get a little bit of, you know, even Lord Ramchandra used to do that. Lord Ramchandra was a king, but still he went in disguise and he went amongst the people to hear what they were saying. Not that I'll do anything. He wanted to know, he wanted to hear. Am I doing something which is actually perhaps, you know, could jeopardize the welfare of the citizens because they may lose faith in me and not follow the, you know, the process of the Vedas like that. And not for his own, you know, I don't want people saying nasty things about me, you know, like that. So, so this here, this is the point being given here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So what I'd like to do is just take the opportunity. We have been hearing about Srila Prabhupada bringing his big mission to the West, leaving India for the USA. And there's a little part of, this is the third part, I've done two parts, they seem to be fortunately fit in with the purport. So here we want to hear about the big picture of why Prabhupada was so determined to establish this essential principle of hearing and chanting the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also said amongst the 64 items of Krishna consciousness there are 5 which are most prominent. That is association from devotees. Hearing and chanting in the association of devotees. And as we heard at the beginning, that's where Krishna gives his blessing. Not just from Radharani, but the representatives of Radharani. Radharani is the guru, and then, you know, the guru, the disciplic succession comes down. Srimati Radharani is the original guru, and Lord Nityananda is also the original guru. Through Lord Nityananda Balaram, we establish ourselves in pure devotional service in our eternal identity as the eternal servant of the Lord. If on that platform we want to take advantage and enter into the conjugal, pastimes of the Lord in any particular, we have to take shelter of Radharani as the spiritual guru in that regard. And even Uddhava, who was one of the most intelligent personalities in the universe, disciple of Brihaspati, the priest of the demigods, the cousin of Krishna, Krishna's dear friend, still he needed to learn, he needed to hear from a leader, because Krishna understood, unless I send you to Vrindavan to see Srimati Radharani and Nanda and the Brajavasis, until then you will not know Braja Prema Bhakti. So much associated, imagine you're associated with Krishna every day. Your spiritual master is Brihaspati. You're very, you're an enlightened personality. Still, that person should not think, oh, there's nothing for me to hear. I know so much. And of course, in Kali Yuga, the problem is, what to speak of the fact that we're not Uddhava? the pauper is proud of the penny. We have so little knowledge. We have so little understanding of the glories of Srila Prabhupada, the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and yet we still have this tendency to think, I don't need to hear from this person and that. So I want to read a little bit about helping us to fit into that big picture with Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada understood that there are so many suffering people in Kali Yuga. The slaves from North Korea out in Siberia, 10 years, imagine. Imagine I take any one of you here now, there's no question, pack your bags now, take enough to, have a set of clothes, jump on that bus, you can come back and see your family in 10 years. You'll be working in Siberia. When you come back, you'll have no money. Imagine if I did that then. How difficult that would be. How difficult it is for the children. In this world, one of the biggest billion-dollar industries is the sex trade for children. Is a huge industry, billions of dollars, and growing by the day. Actually, the slave trade is increasing in the world. It's also one of the biggest industries in the world. A lot of the persons who escape from war-torn zones, Yemen and this and that, and they end up in Europe. So then, what they have in Europe, like Spain, they have also these work camps. So out in the middle of the desert. So the fruits and vegetables that we buy, import from overseas, they're also coming from slaves. These people work in desert, it's like, 45 to 50 degrees, very, very hot, where they have the hot houses. And they take up miles and miles and miles. They live in a room the size of the toilet cubicles. There's no running water, there's no toilets. There's a bit of a shanty, and again, they work just enough. They have to pay for that accommodation, which is more than what they earn, and they have to pay for their food. There's no medical, and they're cut off from family. If they don't do the job, they get thrown out of the country. They have nowhere to go. They're thousands and thousands. Srila Prabhupada understood that if these people could hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, then people would stop following the false leaders of this world, who are just causing so much misery, so much war, so much poverty. So he wanted that the Srimad Bhagavatam be heard, they can follow an actual leader. Instead of developing our hatred for this race and that race, we should develop our love for every living entity, seeing everyone as a spirit soul. And helping people to, you know, with compassion. Srimati Radharani is considered to be the personification of compassion, Krishna's compassion. Radharani doesn't think of someone's qualification. She just thinks, if she sees a devotee and she thinks, this devotee is trying to make Krishna's happiness and Krishna's happiness is my life and soul, then I want to take that person by the hand and take them to Krishna. When she sees devotees preaching Krishna consciousness, she gives it full blessing. You are trying to make Krishna happy, because Krishna says in the Gita, there is no one more dear to me than that person who makes people happy by giving them this teaching, the Gita. The Radharani gives her blessing. Radharani is so concerned with Krishna's happiness that she says that just like the wife who went and served a prostitute to please her husband, her chastity to Krishna is so strong, and she gave the example, just there was this one wife and her husband, I think he was the son of a brahmana, he was very fallen, he had leprosy and he wanted to enjoy with a prostitute. His wife was so chaste that her happiness was his happiness. That was her love. That's how pure her love was. If you're happy, I am happy, I'm not considering myself at all. She went and served that prostitute, that you please, be pleased with me, and then you'll come and, facilitate my husband's desires. And when the prostitute came, and then her husband became ashamed, he understood this beautiful wife loves me so much, and he gave up that idea. But then, when they're on the way home, they're walking, and then Markandeya Rishi happened to be passing, and the leper actually accidentally touched him. So Markandeya Rishi, you'll die before sunset. And so then her wife, his wife, she performed austerities, and by the strength of her chastity, she vowed that the sun will not set today. And she was so chaste, her chastity was so powerful, that the three demigods, we're talking Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, they had to come. Yes, all right. Your husband would live, he will be cured of leprosy. Can the sun set? Yeah, okay. So Radharani's chastity is like that. And just Krishna's happiness. So she is very compassionate. She sees any devotee. You know, this is actually the mood. Sometimes there's a mood amongst devotees that I have this service and no one is going to, take it off me. And no one's going to interfere and like this. Actually, a devotee thinks, like Radharani, that if you can do this service better than me, please, let me serve you. That's Radharani's mood. Then we can look at that and ask, are we following Radharani's mood, or do we have the mood that even if you could perform that service better than me, and even I'm making a disaster of it, there's no way I'll ever let you near that service. So we can judge. But Radharani, if you want to get Radharani's blessings, you try and make Krishna happy. And then Radharani will come after you, take you by the hand. And she will reveal to you, slowly, gradually, your original spiritual identity and everything over the course of a lifetime. She will reveal who you are in the spiritual world and how you can serve. She will make that. You come to Krishna because you're making Krishna happy. Actually, it reminds me of the dream I had when I was a brahmachari. I have to tell this. But that I've told this before, but it just reminds me, especially on Radhastami. I was a brahmachari. when I become a devotee, pretty much all my friends just didn't want to know me anymore, and my family and society. So they literally thought I'd gone crazy. So after a little while in devotional service, you know, not long, 6-8 months, something, I thought, this Srimad Bhagavatam is just, you know, my best friend, he'd love this. You know, I know he's miserable, he's taking drugs, he's doing, if he could read this and then he'd get off the drugs and, you know, learn how to be happy and take to spiritual life. So in my dream, I thought, I'll go get him and I'll bring him. And I thought, to get him to read the Srimad Bhagavatam, if I can get him to see the deities and that he sees how beautiful the deities are, then he might think, oh yes, wow, you know, then, you know, what? So yes, let's sit and hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. So what happened was, in my dream, I went from here, the temple, and caught the tram, caught the train down to Frankston, caught the bus down to Mornington, and then run up the top of the hill, and you know, I was thinking, I've got to get him before, you know, I've got to get back to the temple before the deity shut. So I got to him, and I said, oh, you know, I'd like you to come with me, I've got to show you something. Oh, no, I'm not coming. And I begged him, and he said, all right, I'm coming. So then, run down the hill, got in the bus, you know, up to Frankston, got the train, up to Flinders Street, caught the tram, come running up this street here, come running into the temple, and I'm thinking, oh my God, they're going to shut the deities, and then, you know, they'll be closed for the evening, and then he won't see them, and then he'll go home, and that'll be it. And we come in the door, and just as we come in, the door shut. I was devastated. I was absolutely devastated. And then... then all this smoke, like this morning, all this the frankincense started billowing out over the top of the curtains. I don't think we had the doors in those days. I'm not sure. But it started billowing out. And then what happened was that the curtains opened and Radharani had gotten off the altar, did a little pirouette. She got off the altar, she opened the curtains herself, did a little pirouette and got back on the altar. And I said to my friend, there's Radharani. And I, you know, I had that dream as a brahmachari, and I always knew, I've always kept that in mind, that if you try and preach, you'll definitely get Radharani's mercy. And preaching means helping people to hear properly. The first thing we actually have to help by, when people come to the community, what they should see is that all the devotees love hearing from each other. And if they see that, that loving mood, they will do that. If they come to a community and they say, oh, you know, this one doesn't talk to this group, this one, you know, is in this little clique, I'll do the same. I'll get my little clique somewhere. They'll just follow that. And they'll think that's the standard. They have to come to the temple and let them take advantage of every devotee. If they take advantage of every devotee, you can guarantee they'll go back to Godhead. If they only selectively hear what, according to, you know, all the conditioning in their head, they may, you know, have some problems. Because Prabhupada says in that purport, Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, Canto 7, Chapter 5, verses 23, 25, I think it is, Shravanam, Kirtanam. He says, describing Shravanam, that if a devotee actually doesn't execute the Shravanam process in the beginning, it's essential, because if one doesn't hear properly from the devotees, they will not be able to understand or practice any of the other 9 processes of devotional service. That, you know, you can be around for years and years and years, and you know, but a devotee who is has that ability to hear and accept what they're hearing. Hearing actually means oral reception. One thing is the ears hear it. That is a very mechanical, biological process. You know, there's a sound vibration comes through the wave, you know, it bounces off the eardrum and so many different things. That's called hearing. Transcendental hearing means you accept it in your heart. That's actually called Shravana. Therefore, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it says that these words may have fault. The person speaking may have some fault. But they'll, you know, just like Prabhupada heard from the librarian, he heard from the military person. They may have fault. They're not even on the spiritual platform hardly. He didn't accept that. Their words are true. Why should I reject the true words coming from a person? You know, my Guru Maharaj is faultless and he can act through anyone. Like that. Why have this material vision? And it says there that those who are honest, honest means they're not motivated. They literally just sincerely want to be Krishna conscious and help people in this world go back to Godhead. Those honest persons, even if there's some fault here or there, they will hear and accept. It doesn't just say they hear, they'll also accept. If there's some motivation, they will hear, but they will not accept. And that, as Shravanam means hearing, it's an oral reception. Just like, you know, if you receive the deities, you know, you do things. You show a sign that the deities have opened. It's a reception. It means that you offer your obeisances, you stand, you know, to the arti, you chant. The sound vibration, that is also Krishna, non-different from the transcendental pastimes. The Lord is non-different from his name, form, pastimes, entourage. You give oral reception means that you actually accept it within your heart. You hear it. Now, that doesn't mean that anything a devotee says you have to follow, because then you've got a problem. So therefore, you have to have the big picture. So Srila Prabhupada mentions in that purport that we understand the process of devotional service through our Guru Maharaj. See? So what you actually have to have is you have to have a big picture from your spiritual master, from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the various authorities, and then when you hear something from a devotee, you say, yes, that properly fits into the big picture. See? Now, if it doesn't, you may acknowledge that, somehow or another, either the person's trying to cause you trouble, or they just need some... They're taking the position of being the one who wants to be heard when they should be taking the position of one who wants to speak. They should be taking the position of one who wants to hear. Everyone likes to be the one who's heard. So that sometimes people are taking that position. You hear me, and they're giving wrong instruction. When Srila Prabhupada went to the USA, when he went to the Chaitanya Math, he wanted to take sannyas because his guru was indicating, through sannyas, you will achieve your goals, people will take notice of your works with the Srimad Bhagavatam, and you'll finish that and you'll go to the West. That he understood. He went to the Chaitanya Math, and they were saying, no. Even Prabhupada said, this is the order to all of us. Don't look after one little temple. Take Krishna consciousness all over the world. That's the big picture. No. We must establish, you know, this particular matter. That's our only concern. And as far as, you know, your spiritual master has ordered you to go to the West, that can wait. That, you know, you establish yourself in India, you know, publish some of our books. Now you imagine 10, 12 years go by. Prabhupada would have left the planet. The Prabhupada understood, you know, I'm hearing an instruction, and what my Guru Maharaj is saying is I cannot hear and chant properly in the association of these people because they're bereft of the big picture. And they're unwilling to actually hear properly. They're not hearing properly, and what they have heard is also improper. So it's not that every devotee who says, oh yes, I have to listen to every devotee. It has to be consistent with the instructions of one spiritual master specifically, the Srimad Bhagavatam generally, you know, the GBC and, you know, the temple authorities and the community as well. Guru, Shastra, Sadhu. It has to be consistent with the general sadhus like that. But in this case, Srila Prabhupada His understanding was consistent with Guru principle, confirmed by Shastra, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srimad Bhagavatam itself, saying this is where Krishna appears in Kali Yuga in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. And if they hear this message, Krishna in their heart will, you know, purify everything within their heart and help them to, you know, come to the Krishna conscious platform. But the sadhus in his entire society were actually on a whole different platform. So sometimes that happens. So it's good when all three line up. But it doesn't always happen. Anyway, I'm not going to get to read any much of this. Maybe I'll just read a few snippets. We have to finish at 8:30, right? Yeah? Well, I'll just read a little bit of Srila Prabhupada's. Just a little bit. Little Prabhupada Leela, just to get us through the day. And just to finish off on a sweet note. So... So we got up to the point where Srila Prabhupada, in 1961 at the Vyasa Puja, he had spoken very strongly to his god brothers, understood that they're really, he says, he saw himself helpless and alone against the vast forces of Maya. His god brothers were not an army united against Maya's forces, but were more like apathetic monks, growing old, holding on to religious principles and religious rituals devoid of life. So, the Krishna conscious world he had described in his poem was not a utopia, presented merely to incite his god brothers. A dream is talk of the impossible. It was possible. But in any case, he had to write and print Krishna conscious books and preach abroad. It was what Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati wanted. If his god brothers would not do it jointly, then he would do it. So he moves to Vamsi Gopalaji Temple, from Vamsi Gopalaji Temple to Radha Damodar Temple in Vrindavan for writing the Srimad Bhagavatam. And of course, this is where Jiva Goswami and, you know, instructed Narottam and Srinivasacharya and Shyamananda, and Rupa and Sanatana, before they left, they all would discuss the distribution, you know, of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the scriptures based upon that throughout India, and then, you know, eventually all over the world. So in July 1962, Bhaktivedanta Swami changed his Vrindavan residence from Vamsi Gopalaji Temple to Radha Damodar Temple. For 3 years, he had been paying the rent for 5 rupees per month for his Radha Damodar rooms and paying for the extensive repairs. Now the main room had electric lighting and a fan, and the walls had been plastered and painted. The room was 7 feet by 15 feet, with smooth plaster walls and a floor of sandstone squares of uneven sizes. This is the same as the stone tiles cemented in front of the samadhi of Rupa Goswami. The room was furnished with a small, low desk, a cushion mat, and a wooden cot with a rope-woven surface to lie on. The view was not the panorama he had enjoyed at Kasigat, and the neighbourhood was not so secluded, but now, without even moving from his room, he could look into the temple and see a portion of the altar and the 4-foot-high form of Vrindavan Chandra. The black marble Krishna deity Krishna Das Kaviraj had worshipped hundreds of years ago. The main room was connected to the kitchen by a 10-foot-long veranda which faced the courtyard, and from the kitchen he could see the samadhi of Rupa Goswami. So the place was superior to his room at the Vamsi Gopalaji Temple, because now he was living in the temple of Jiva Goswami, where great souls like the Goswamis, Rupa, Sanat, Raghunath and Jiva had all gathered, taken prasadam, chanted and discussed Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. It was the best place to work on Srimad Bhagavatam. At 1 a.m, when no one else was up and it was very quiet, Bhaktivedanta Swami would wake and begin writing. Since electric failures were not uncommon in Vrindavan, he would often work by lantern light. After working a few hours in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhaktivedanta Swami would sit in his room and chant japa. Although in Vrindavan there were hundreds of small temple-like tombs honouring past Vaishnava acharyas, Bhaktivedanta Swami regularly visited the chief samadhis, those of Jiva Goswami, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. Within a separate area of the temple compound were the Bhajankuti and the samadhi of Rupa Goswami. Bhaktivedanta Swami often sat chanting before Rupa Goswami's samadhi. Most pilgrims considered this the most important feature of the visit to Radha Damodar temple, and even if they offered respect nowhere else, they would stop before the samadhi of Rupa Goswami. They would stop with folded hands and bow, chanting Jai Radhe, or with their hands in their bead bags, chant the Hare Krishna mantra, circumambulating the samadhi. And of course, Rupa Goswami and Sanatan, they were sent by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because Vrindavan had disappeared. You know, you go there and you revive, you write books, you revive the temples and the holy places. Otherwise, when they went there, they were, you know, just some of the locals knew some things and some things weren't quite. So literally, Vrindavan as we know it today is because of Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami. The devotees of Lord Chaitanya, known as Rupanugas, followers of Rupa Goswami. Without following the teachings and example of Rupa Goswami, one cannot enter the path of pure devotion to Radha and Krishna. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati was especially known as a strict Rupanuga, as described in the Sanskrit prayers written in his honour. So again, on the principle of following, we especially follow Rupa Goswami, because that's how we learn how to behave as a devotee in our external, you know, feature in this world, as a man, a woman, a sannyasa, you know, grihastha, what have you, and internally by meditating, learning that process of throughout the day, 24 hours a day, always being absorbed in the Astakaliya Leela, eventually, you know, the eternal pastimes of Radha Krishna. Our hearts should always be filled with that loving attitude. We should always see ourselves as, you know, that by what happens is by meditating on those pastimes of the Lord, learning that heart through Rupa Goswami, gradually you start to think, if I was there with Krishna doing, saying this, I'd probably like to help Radharani at this stage, because her hair seems a bit ruffled. And what happens is gradually those meditations, devotees, by the grace of Radharani, they actually enter into those pastimes and get to do those things. And when they leave this body, then they enter into the eternal pastimes. And that's how, you know, it gradually our eternal identity is revealed. What Rupa Goswami also does is the bhakti scriptures. They understand that just as a magnet, it attracts iron. But if the iron is rusty, it won't move towards the magnet, which it should. That's its natural position. So you actually have to polish the iron, and then it just naturally attracts. So our attraction to the loving pastimes of Radha Krishna, as long as we're impure, covered by identity with this body, some other identification, our attraction to that those loving pastimes don't manifest. So part of following Rupa Goswami is first becoming purified, and when that purification is there, then the soul very spontaneously, very powerfully just attracts to that, nothing in this material world. Anything in this material world they're allergic to, like that. And then when that attraction is there, then again, just as Uddhava, you know, took shelter of the Brajabasis, one, you know, is attracted, but they have to take shelter of the Brajabasis. Who are the Brajabasis? Srila Prabhupada. The closest Brajabasi to us right now is Srila Prabhupada. You can learn everything. What is the mood of Radharani? You dissociate with Prabhupada. You hear about Prabhupada, you'll understand the mood of Radharani. The Shishastika. Aslishava paradatambanastamam madasanam mamadam karutava yitatata bhavadatulampado matpananathastu sevanapraha. I know no one but Krishna as my Lord. This is spoken by Radharani and by Chaitanya. I know no one but Krishna as my Lord. And he shall remain so, even if he handles me roughly by his embrace, by making me broken hearted, by not being present before me. He is completely. To do anything and everything, for he is always my worshipful Lord unconditionally. That is Radharani's mood. That is Prabhupada's mood. If you want to think like Radharani, think like Prabhupada. Both internally and externally, we can learn everything. So, therefore, we're called Rupanugas. Bhaktivedanta Swami's spiritual master and the previous spiritual masters in the disciplic succession had wanted the Krishna consciousness movement to spread all over the world. And as Bhaktivedanta Swami daily gathered inspiration, sitting before Rupa Goswami's samadhi, he prayed to his spiritual predecessors for guidance. Always taking guidance. Not that I'm a big guru, I'm a big sannyasi. Always. A devotee, never in their eternal existence, will stop taking guidance. Why should we do it now? The intimate direction he received from them was an absolute dictation, and no government, no publisher, nor anyone else could shake or diminish it. Rupa Goswami wanted him to go to the West. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati wanted him to go to the West. Krishna had arranged that he be brought to Radha Damodar Temple to receive their blessings. At the Radha Damodar Temple, he felt he had ended an eternal residence known only to pure devotees of the Lord. Yet although they were allowing him to associate intimately with them in the place of their pastimes, they were ordering him to leave Radha Damodar and Vrindavan and to deliver the message of the Acharyas to forgetful parts of the world. So I'll just leave it there. But you see in the pastimes of Srila Prabhupada that one who does always in that mood of being the servant, following the Prabhu and following one's guru who is manifest at all times in all places, Radharani acts through that guru to gradually bring you to Krishna if you preach. And that's that process. If you try to jump over the devotees or jump directly to Krishna, you'll be ruined. Hare Krishna. The main place we get the big picture from is Prabhupada. That is even more so than the other acharyas. We don't jump over Prabhupada. If we want to get the bigger picture, we should, you know, hear Prabhupada's purports and, you know, really try to have faith in what Srila Prabhupada is saying. Just like that principle. I was mentioning in Bhakti Vaibhava, Bhaktivedanta, that probably every devotee would have read that purport, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. But that sentence, that if you don't hear properly, you will not be able to perform properly any of the other nine processes of devotional service. You really just stay on that point. You can do all those things. You can be, externally, you're chanting, you know, but there may be Vaishnava apparat, You may be doing preaching, you may be doing, you know, deity work, so many things. But you can't do it properly until you've actually learned from a devotee what is proper and you follow and do that. You know? So here, you know, associating with Prabhupada, you know, we should, the one thing that strikes me that if I said, you know, what is the most valuable thing I've learned from Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, it's this. That he never lets you go past the foundations too quickly. In other words, in that principle, if you hear, don't race away from that until you can actually do it. Oh yeah, okay, I've heard a couple of things, now I'm going to be a big preacher and big manager and, you know, whatever. Prabhupada doesn't let you do that. He'll tell you in the beginning, you won't get very far. And you'll have to come back to that. When you realize the mess, you'll have to come back to that. Oh, I need to hear. Prabhupada's purports are so wonderful because, you know, he allows us to fully understand the items that we need to do. We get the big picture, but for where we are, we can understand that I must hear. And Prabhupada will tell you, if you don't hear properly, you know, you can't do the other thing. All right, I'll have faith in that. That's actually hearing. I'll have faith in that. I'm not going to race off and do something to get attention or what. Prabhupada said, I can't go further than that until I hear properly. Put your faith in it and do it. If we say, oh, look, I'm a very talented person. You know, Prabhupada said that. I've got my, you know, I come from a corporate background. I've got so much education. You know, what do these other devotees know? You know, this one's a farmer. You know, this one's off the street. You know, what do they know? You know, I've got this elevated, you know, academic education, so many qualities and what have you. You know, then I'm sure I'll be okay. No? Put your faith. So that's hearing from the mind. As soon as we start listening to the mind instead of Srila Prabhupada, we're in our order. And we'll waste years of our devotional life. You want to advance really quickly? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, the course says, Sankirtan means that you hear and chant completely. That's where in the Sankirtan movement means not only do it congregationally, but in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, the hearing for the first time practically is done completely, all the way up to Krishna Radharani. The biggest picture, it is, you know, complete Sankirtan. There's never been such a complete process. Hearing and chanting has never been done so completely as within the Sankirtan movement. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, the course, says, if we don't hear and chant properly, we will not get the effects properly of that hearing and chanting. And then what happens is because we're not getting, you know, very solid, powerful spiritual realizations and strengths and ability and understanding how to practice devotional service nicely in loving relationships with other devotees. Instead of that, you know, things are very disturbing, you know, in our devotional life, and, you know, we can't quite make sense of, you know, different things. We don't have a clear picture sometimes what we should do. That's because we're not hearing and chanting properly, and then we begin to lose faith in hearing and chanting. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta says, then we put it aside, and we go back to our mind. Look, I tried hearing and chanting, you know, it didn't really work so much. You know, it's a bit overrated, so I'm going back to my own personal qualifications. And then we really start, you know, going downhill. Stick with hearing and chanting. Just stick with having faith in Prabhupada. Hear Srila Prabhupada's Srimad Bhagavatam. Have faith in what he says. And, you know, we sing every morning. Srila Prabhupada used to say to his disciples, what is that? Guru Vakya. What's that? The third one. Guru, yeah? My only desire is to hear, you know, that Krishna consciousness from your, you know, lotus mouth. That's the only desire. So every morning we say, oh yeah, my only desire is to just, you know, take that instruction from Srila Prabhupada. And then we read some purport, oh yeah, tried that, you know, hearing and chanting, yeah, you know, I'll do something. So, you know, to actually do it, then it's very effective. Srila Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness is very simple for the simple, and if we, you know, duplicious have other motives, then very difficult, practically impossible. So, you know, a devotee who hears, especially getting the big picture from Krishna and then works within the community, that person will not have a problem in Krishna consciousness. They will advance very quickly and very easily. And a person who skips that process of hearing, listens to the mind, it depends upon their own, you know, guidance, not Radharani's, they will have all sorts of difficulties. Well, it's a common circumstance that to end up in a situation where you are getting contradictory instructions from devotees. Now, one of the things that Krishna is testing there is how, if we have Vaishnava qualities and faith in the process of hearing and chanting, we will not sabotage the hearing and chanting process by aparad. So our faith is that if we hear and chant properly without Vaishnava aparad, we will get love of God, day by day increasing. If there's a situation where devotees are giving conflicting things, and then to solve that, we offend a devotee, in other words, we put aside the process of hearing and chanting once again, and then Krishna is showing us, one, what is our actual situation? Okay, we're a young devotee who really doesn't know the way of living in a Vaishnava community without causing offences. That's called, you know, Kanishtha. You know, so Krishna's shown us that. We're thinking we're, you know, so big and powerful. And Krishna arranges this complicated situation, and our neophyte mentality would just, you know, spring into action. So Krishna shows that to us, and then we have all sorts of trouble. A mature devotee, under no circumstances but would they commit Vaishnava aparad, even in stressful, you know, conflicting situations. And that becomes revealed to the whole community, because Krishna not only reveals someone who's pretending to be a big devotee that actually there's a lot of bad qualities and inabilities, he's revealing that to the community. He doesn't like imposters. He'll show it. And if someone is very nice, Krishna will arrange a situation that only the mature devotees can handle. Everyone will see, oh, there's nice devotees. These are Krishna's arrangements. Every temple, every dham has a covering of what, you know, is like Proto Maya. It's a Vrindavan, Mayapur, the temple. Maya is there and Krishna is there. They're both there together. For those who are insincere, Maya Devi tests them with these circumstances. And what they do is that they get caught up in the covering externals, put aside the essential process of hearing and chanting, and it keeps them from ever entering into the eternal pastimes of Krishna, where they're not qualified. It is the arrangement of Krishna. It's not as if, oh, will there ever be a time when, you know, these things won't happen. They were there in Prabhupada's time, they were there in the Goswami's time, they were there in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time. It is a natural process, you know, that Maya Devi is helping us to push through the external sort of an artificial approach to devotional service with a lot of pride. Maya Devi is helping us to push through that, and by really having faith in the pure process and follow it properly, Shravanam Kirtanam, without aparad, then we enter into the spiritual heart of a temple, a Vaishnava community, or a dham. And therefore, Krishna, Prabhupada said, when he said, don't think, Melbourne, I think he was in Vrindavan, what did he say? Don't think if you're living in Melbourne in the temple that is Melbourne. That is Vrindavan. But if we're a surface type of devotee, a young devotee, you know, not, you know, just doing things a little externally. Yes, I'm hearing, I'm chanting, but, you know, not properly, as Prabhupada said. Prabhupada said, do it without upright. Then we won't experience this as Vrindavan. We'll experience, even the temple, you know, like in Gaudiya Math, it become like hell. But if we're hearing and chanting properly without the Vaishnava apparat, you will always be in Vrindavan, right here in Melbourne, when you're in the temple and when you go out preaching, wherever you go at that. So these things are natural. The main thing, if you don't commit Vaishnava apparat during the time where there seems to be different opposing factions even amongst the devotees, Radharani, Krishna, the Guru, who's always present, will guide you. But because we listen to our false ego, we're not hearing. But they're always there to guide us. See? So, if we're sincere, not duplicitous, unmotivated, and we're not listening to the mind for some other purpose, you will hear and see very clearly the instructions of Guru, of Radharani, coming through Guru, through each of those persons. Why the mind disturbs us? The question is, it's a good question actually, why the mind sometimes disturbs us even though we're doing devotional service? Well, you know, the biggest problem is we're listening to it. You know, what happens is, again, it depends who we want to hear from. We can hear from Krishna, as we do devotional service, we can remember what Krishna said, we can remember what Radharani said, we can remember what the devotee said, we can remember, and we're sort of, that remember, that's another way of hearing, it's part of hearing it. We're remembering what they said, that's also hearing. Or we can forget everything that Krishna said, everything Radharani said, everything the nice devotees have said, and just listen to our mind. Usually that's when we get disturbance. So it depends who we want to listen to. You know, when the mind is practiced, that we've heard so much, we're just always thinking about what Krishna said, what Radharani said, what the devotee, well, that at no time does the mind say anything different from what they said. When we get to that point, there'll be no more disturbance. Your mind will be thinking exactly what Krishna's thinking. Your mind will just be thinking exactly what Radharani, just be full of love. Then there'll be no more disturbance. Very good question, very good question. So just to rephrase the question, that trying to follow, taking the you know, the mood that if someone can do the service better than I can, then I will become their assistant because we want Krishna's happiness. But we don't know whether that necessarily is the right choice. Now, Prabhupada came across, this is where it says, we learn everything from Prabhupada. All these different things that come up, they're all in the Prabhupada Leelamrita. Prabhupada approached his godbrothers in the mood that, as your servants, let us go to the West and preach as a Guru Maharaj. You are my senior godbrother, senior sannyasi, I, in the role of serving you, let us preach in the West as Guru Maharaj wanted. Right? So he kept the mood of Radharani. The attempt must be there. The proper attitude must be there. He never went there, I'm more advanced than you. Guru Maharaj given me instruction, not you. I must be, you know, more qualified. Therefore, you serve me and I'll go. He never had that mood. Even though it was the instruction of his guru, you do it, he went there as a servant. What he saw was that in this case, the persons literally were obstructing the service of the spiritual master. So then the question is, what happens to the mood of Radharani that if someone can do it better, then let do it? But in that case, you know, he obviously saw that although he was just always in the position of the servant, his position never ever changed to Prabhu. You know, he still remained the servant. But he understood that these devotees will obstruct me. And the mission of the guru is so important. It's not that they're obstructing me. Let them kick me. That's what I deserve. I'm a rascal. I'm not a devotee. I'm a rascal. They can kick me. They can beat me. Do what they like. I will take that in the mood of Radharani, that let me suffer. Let me be embraced harshly. But I must preserve the happiness of Krishna, which is to preach all over the world. So he maintained the mood of Radharani. See? Always, humble servant. And then if sometimes other devotees are causing us so much difficulty in our service, we've never left the mood that we're happy to serve you, we have no ego, let us do jointly, I'm seeing you as more qualified, I have no qualification, I deserve to be beaten like a dog. But I will accept that and I will accept criticism. I will go to the West and you will all criticize me. Let me suffer like that. But I will not give up serving the devotees who are saying this is the happiness of Krishna. And in Prabhupada's case, literally, he had no help from his movement. Literally, one or two devotees, the whole lot of them were really just not going to help him. So he would accept, all right, everyone just, you know, is not going to help. I will still not give up. So sometimes you see that. And this is, of course, it's why it's good to get, we have sadhus, we have leaders, but we also have a general consensus. Because the danger in a community, as we saw in the Gaudiya Math, is if everyone says this is right even though it's wrong, the person who's saying the wrong thing is ostracized. It's very dangerous. We don't want that in a community where, you know, one devotee is picked out that, you know, you're a bad devotee and the whole community turns against that person, that man or woman. Like that. So therefore, we also have to, you know, apart from leaders, we actually have a general consensus where there's a nice attitude between the entire community and those things don't happen. But, you know, maintaining the mood of Srimati Radharani is what allows us to make the right decision even in those difficult circumstances. And as soon as we give up the mood of Radharani, we cannot make the decision. And that mood of Radharani is perfectly presented in the way Srila Prabhupada executed his devotional service internally and externally. And that mood is filled with in his books of Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's where we get that. Hare Krishna. Peers can be very competitive. It's a fact. Very, very competitive. I'll tell you, when we were brahmacharis, you know, the competition, you know, was to, you know, who literally be first for Mangalati, you know, because, oh, he's more fired up than I am, you know, so he was there like 5 minutes. So we used to get, you know, the alarm clock went off or what have you, or you'd wake up before the alarm, you know, you'd think, oh, I'm going to wake up before the alarm tomorrow, you know, and I'll sneak out and I'll be down the shaft. We were so competitive. One day, I won't say who it was, but I saw one of the devotees. He was so determined to beat me. He dipped his toothbrush in the fish pond. I don't think we have fish, and cleaned his teeth on the way to the shower. Because he was going to get in that shower before me. So I know what you're talking about. I know what you're talking about. I've been through it. But anyway, at least we can give Radharani and Krishna a good laugh. Jai, all glory to Prabhupada.